What's going on, everybody? Welcome back. It's your boy HD, and you know what it is, it's a textual talk. We on episode, like, I'm just guess, like 35 right now. It could be 36, I don't know, but I've really been getting it in. Appreciate y'all. If you're watching on the Patreon, I appreciate y'all for tapping in with me. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure you hit that thumbs up button, share it out on your social media. But we in for a good one today, man. We got a special guest. She is a master sorcerer. I'm gonna like say sorcerer, but really the word is sorcerer. And she came to kick it with us today, and she's gonna educate us on some things we may be ignorant of. But without further ado, let's welcome Miss Janae. Hey Janae, how you doing today?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing good. Monday, you know what I'm saying? It's just one of them days to start off. I ain't gonna lie, it ain't been that good of a day, to be honest. But other than that, you know, I'm still rocking. We still alive. So, you know, that's the only thing I can really deal with that. But, you know, before we get into this, I just want to say also, I'm glad that we finally got able to do this. I think I've been trying to get you on here for months now. You know what I'm saying, guys? Like, she's super exclusive. It took forever. I think, you know, she probably wanted to vet me for a while before she actually said yes, which I understand. You know, because I tend to do like a lot of my reaching out on Twitter, because I just see a lot of interesting, especially like women that's killing in the tech game. I see more of y'all, and I was like, man, that's cool. And I like, if I see interesting tweets from y'all, then I normally just say, okay, they're gonna give me a good interview. Let's see if that'd be interested. So you was like, well, we'll do it eventually or whatever. No, actually, initially, I don't even think you was following me. I think it took a minute for that to happen. But but yeah, without further ado, can you tell people a little bit about yourself?
Yes. So my name is Janae. I am a New York native. I currently live in Charlotte, North Carolina. You know, I don't have a traditional HR background like most people who would work in, you know, my particular field. I actually have a degree in history and pre-law, and I fell into this industry. I fell into recruiting like, oh man, I don't even know how many years ago. It's been like 5.5, almost 6 years now. And I've stayed, clearly, because I love what I'm doing. I worked across multiple different industries, still within recruitment and talent acquisition as a whole, and pivoted into, you know, talent acquisition within tech early last year. I worked on tech-related roles and like recruited for tech-related roles since like 2018. So, but it's a little different when you're working for like a management consulting GovCon versus working for a fintech and then moving into a big tech. It's definitely different. So I'm trying to think as far as industries. Whew, okay. Big tech, fintech, management consulting / GovCon / startup. Never doing a startup again. But I've also worked in like telecom, healthcare, retail, sales, and legal and international recruitment. So a little bit of everything, I'd say, across the board. But I mean, that's just a little bit about me in general. You know, it's pretty boring person, I feel like.
Man, that's not boring. Let's give her some gunshots for that. Because first thing I want to ask you is, how is it being a native New Yorker being in Charlotte? I've actually been seeing, like, is Charlotte on its way to being, like, well, maybe I can't say number two, because I guess the DMV area would be number two. Would Charlotte be, like, Atlanta and DMV number three, like the way that I see like a lot of black people out there, and I see like they're moving companies and a whole bunch of things out there. Like, what do you think about that?
I would say, I feel like Houston would come before Charlotte in that way for sure.
Well, let me clarify on that, because Houston is cool culturally wise and stuff like that, but when it comes to tech jobs, they aren't they're still behind Dallas and Austin, even when in Texas. So I was referring to, like, yeah. I've been seeing like a lot of different tech jobs, stuff like that, going to Charlotte. And that's what I was referring to. I've seen Atlanta, and I know DMV, and then I threw it in the mix, but like a lot of Black people being in the area, you know, doing well for themselves. So that's why I asked that question. Maybe that helps a little more.
So for Charlotte, it's kind of like two separate things, because a city where you're seeing like an influx of Black people doing well off, I'm not going to say Charlotte is like the top city. Is it rising? Yes. But there's also an influx of people who are non-Black in this city that are doing probably better than most of the Black people that are here, because it's a lot of Charlotte natives. So people are actually being pushed out. I live in the area called Uptown Charlotte. It's really downtown. I don't know why it's called Uptown, but
we can tell you live in the Uptown area. You know what I'm saying? We can tell you're Uptown stunner.
Oh, you see the window.
I saw the view earlier before it got dark. I saw the view.
Oh yeah. I love my baby here. I came back intentionally, but as far as tech, a lot of people don't know that Charlotte is actually number 7 on top tech cities when it comes to the top 50. Yes, Charlotte is number 7. And reason being, you know, you have, Charlotte has been a financial banking kind of city for years, right? You have all of these banks, all these financial institutions transitioning into what we consider fintech. So automatically, because you have this large presence of the banking industry and the financial industry here pivoting into tech, it's already going to create a boom there, right? That's one. Two, people don't know is like Robinhood. I don't know if they have a solid location in Charlotte yet, but they have employees in Charlotte. Like Robinhood has employees in Charlotte, and they're going to build an office if they don't already have an office space. Trying to think of Credit Karma has had a presence in Charlotte. You know, they have a presence in San Francisco and they have a presence in Charlotte. They've increased their presence in Charlotte. I never remember them putting out an article about having 600 more jobs and putting about $30 million more into the city. Moving back to like the fintech side, LendingTree. LendingTree is building a building in Charlotte. It's like 10 minutes away from where I live. You have Regions Bank, which is building a location here. Deloitte already has a building here. Ally Financial, Ally Bank, they had an Uptown location they were leasing, and then they had like a South Charlotte location. They've now centralized that everything into Uptown Charlotte. You already have Bank of America here. You already have Wells Fargo here. You have a U.S. Bank location. You have LPL Financial. You have TIAA. Truist, which is the result of the merger of SunTrust and BB&T, they have a building up here as well. And then, of course, you still have Duke Energy. Like Duke Energy has run Charlotte, like North Carolina, for a while. So you still have them here, too. Microsoft has a location in Charlotte that a lot of people are very unaware of. And I actually saw it by accident. So you have a lot of different businesses here. And what I said, I think may happen, of course, this may not be true, but this is what I believe. You have an influx of the big techs that have moved to Atlanta. You know, you have Microsoft has that office there. You have Google that has that office there. Amazon has a small office there. And more than likely, I'm sure they'll be growing it. But then you see Microsoft has an office in Charlotte. So what I'm thinking is that the rest are going to follow suit. Google is eventually going to end up having a location in Charlotte. Amazon already has like WeWork spaces in Charlotte. I'm sure they're going to expand their presence as far as the corporate side here. And you're going to have these multiple different companies competing because they want to increase. I mean, we know they went to Atlanta to increase their Black talent because not everybody wants to move to Seattle. Not everybody wants to move to the West Coast. So like, okay, let's go where they're at. There is a presence. There is a Black presence in Charlotte. Like, let's not pretend like there's not, because it definitely exists. Charlotte is, I don't want to, it's hard to explain. Like, there's a large presence of Black people here. And I personally would say Charlotte's a Black city personally. But also, there's a lot of other cultures here as well. And the transition of Charlotte over the past, I don't know, 12 years is different. So I actually went to Johnson C. Smith University, which is about 10 minutes away from here in Charlotte. So coming back to Charlotte for me, it's not like, oh, this is a new place I've never been before. No, I spent a pivotal time of like my young adulthood in Charlotte, like in college. So for me, it was like, I want to come back to this city now, you know, towards my late 20s, really get to experience it. from a different lens, from a different view, be able to build some businesses out here, make some impact, do some work. But I will say the city has changed a lot. This is not the same city that I went to school in. This building didn't even exist. Half of the apartments uptown were parking lots. So, yeah.
That's dope. I mean, I'm from, I have some family that moved from Shreveport to Charlotte. They always talk about like, I still haven't had a chance to visit Charlotte yet. I plan to. Because, like I said, I like what's going on because, you know, I love the DFW area. Unless I move to somewhere like DeSoto, I want to probably have my home in a well-to-do area where Black people stay. And I think that's important to me because I got daughters. And I want them, when they walk outside, to see people that are like their daddy and their mom doing well, you know. And nothing wrong with staying in the, you know, other communities. Nothing is wrong with that either because those houses are nice, cool. I mean, you still could say, oh, we got a nice house. But to me, it's nothing like, you know, that because I did years ago, I did research about like how when we all stay together in nice areas and keep it up, like we keep our property value good opposed to, which is possibly, I don't know if it's changed or not, but it used to be when we would move into areas that we were the minority, we actually would bring the property value down. So I have to review that stat. I haven't reviewed it in some years, but that's kind of one of the reasons why I like it. And I feel like my city, it used to be like, it's pretty much but half Black now, my hometown, and they lost like a lot of jobs and they can't compete right now. Most of us come to Texas just because it's nothing to, you know, no jobs for the graduates or anything like that, unless you want to be like a nurse or a fireman, a policeman, or maybe you do some oil work. Other than that, no, not a lot of white collar jobs. Mm-hmm. But if they can follow suit of like a Atlanta or like a Charlotte or something like that, and just really get, they got like a Amazon fulfillment center coming. So maybe that if they do decent with that, maybe that attracts some more companies and maybe they can build off that. But it's got to be a 10 to 15 year process, like you said, like 12 years in order for them to get back to the prominence they was like in the early 80s. But it's not no history lesson, even though I know you like history. And I'm actually going to go into that. It's like, you know, how does one do history and pre-law and then end up sourcing? Because I know for me, like I said it many times, I wanted to be an architect at one time. Why? I don't know. But I wanted to be in architecture and then ended up doing what I'm doing now. So how did that come about?
So I actually went to college with the intent of being a criminal justice attorney, defense attorney. So that's why I majored in something I love, where you're doing a lot of reading and writing, and then minored in pre-law because I knew that that was going to be what I was going to do in law school. I took like a 2-year gap, you could say, and worked in politics, worked in state government, quit my state government job, and moved up to Baltimore. And just was like, I need to find a job. So I found a like temp job for like a
real quick law firm. Real quick, before you keep on going, did you get the Baltimore accent while you was in B-more?
No, never. No, most definitely not. But I can say I understand what they're saying. I tell people, I'm like, I can understand AAV and D.C., Maryland, Baltimore, North Carolina, South Carolina, Atlanta, and New York, of course. I'm like, you know, just, it doesn't matter. But anyway, I moved to Baltimore. I was still looking at a law school up there, worked for an attorney in private practice, and was like, okay, yeah, I don't want to be a lawyer anymore. So then I just started looking for like administrative assistant type of roles, executive assistant, because my experience had been like a legal assistant for like, you know, judges and attorneys. And I landed this role with this company, which was sold to me as an office administrator. And they're like, yeah, we're going to be doing some elements of recruiting. I was like, okay, I can do that. I mean, you know, whatever. I was a little campus recruiting assistant in undergrad. So cool. No. That job was like 70-80% recruitment. And at first I was doing very well. I actually was doing the best out of all of our offices. All our offices were in New York and I was in Baltimore. And then I was just like extremely underpaid, extremely like unmotivated. And I began to have really poor performance in that role. And I actually ended up getting fired. I got fired from my first recruiting job. This was in 2017.
Okay.
And I was just like,
all right.
I was like, I can't do this. I was like, I can't do this. I hate it. I hate it. I hated my job. And so when I got fired, I was like, okay, I need a job. So I actually started like applying for jobs. I started applying for like executive assistant roles, administrative assistant roles again. And I actually went through the interview process with Toyota Financial. They had reached out to me on LinkedIn and it was for a recruiter role, like a contract recruiter. And I was like, okay, I'll interview. I went through the entire process. It was between me and one other person. They went with the other person. And then that just made me change my scope of what I was going to start looking for as far as positions to apply for. So I was like, all right, I'll start applying for recruiter roles then. See, like, okay, maybe it sucked here, but maybe it won't suck somewhere else. And that's what I did. I started applying for jobs in DC because I was like, I hate Baltimore, so I need to move. No offense to anybody from Baltimore. It's just not for me at all. And I landed a job as like a legal staffing recruiter for a translation localization company that had a legal staffing department. So I was recruiting attorneys for long-term, short-term document review projects and some like contract roles that maybe would last 6 months. And then for some reason, I became really good at my job and my boss tasked me with recruiting linguists in different countries. So I was recruiting people for language projects in like the UK and Côte d'Ivoire, Ivory Coast, Belgium, Italy, Spain, and all these different countries. And I liked what I was doing. I liked my team. I hated my boss. So I started looking for jobs elsewhere. And I ended up working for a startup. I transitioned into corporate recruitment because I've done staffing, but not for a staffing firm, if that makes sense. So I didn't get commission. I just did the high volume. But that's how I ended up in it. It was an accident because the role was sold to me as something completely different. And I just decided to stay. I wanted to try different industries, different types of recruitment. I learned more about sourcing and I pivoted full time into sourcing in 2020. Prior to that, I was doing heavy sourcing in my recruiting role because I work for a startup. So you have to do a lot of heavy sourcing because people don't know who your company is. But I moved solely into recruitment in 2020. And I haven't, you know, left sourcing then intentionally. So, yeah, hope that answers your question.
Definitely did. So since you ended it like that, what is the difference between recruiting and sourcing?
So with recruiting, there are elements of sourcing in it, of course. Sourcing itself is you tend to reach out to passive candidates. You're not necessarily reaching out to active candidates. Active candidates are people actively applying for the roles. But you can do sourcing within the database. And sourcing within the database is reaching out to those candidates that have maybe applied for a role in the past. They recently applied for a role. They got rejected for, you know, whatever reason. You know, I'll break it down this way. Let's say you have an opening for a data analyst role, for argument's sake. You have about 700 people apply for the role. There's one recruiter working on that role. It's one data analyst position. They're going to look at the first 100 applications. Maybe they'll find 10, 15 applications that they want to go to phone screening. Then maybe they'll go back to the next 100. So they're at 200 and they'll pull from there. So now maybe you have 30 applications that you've pulled for phone screenings out of 200. Everyone else after that 200 is automatically rejected. So if you're a 201, you're SOL. So what I would do in some cases is that 200 through 700, I'd go in there and look for their applications, look to see if they have the skills that I'm looking for a role, and I'll reach out to them. They may not even be looking anymore. They may have gotten a new role, whatever it may be. But passive, they're not necessarily actively applying for roles on the market, but it just depends. Sorry, my light keeps going out. But and with sourcing, we tend to use, we do some data scraping. We tend to sometimes use not just like Chrome and Firefox, but there's other different websites that fall in between the standard website and kind of dark web searching. So it's like that in between that we can use to find people's information and candidates. There's a lot of different sourcing tools. So if you've ever gotten an email from a recruiter and you're like, I never even applied for anything at your company, how the heck did you get my information? Because your data has been scraped from any of the websites that you've used, whether it's a LinkedIn, whether it's your Facebook, whether it's your Instagram, whether it's your Twitter, whether if you have a GitHub, whether if you've done shopping on a website, we can pull that information. We can pull your email. I know how to find people's emails, personal emails, work emails, phone numbers, personal phone numbers, addresses. I can pull all that information. I know how to do all of that. And we create Boolean search strings on Google, X-ray search strings on Google, or you can do it within LinkedIn, or you can do it within any ATS. So that is what we do as sourcing. We literally reach out to talent. We find them. We get them interested in opportunities. We qualify them. We pre-qualify them for opportunities. And once we pre-qualify them, we tend to push them off to the recruiter to take them through the full process. Now, recruiters, depending on the size of the company, they will look at people who apply for roles. They'll pull out the applications. They'll reach out. They may do an in-depth phone screening and they'll take them through the entire interview process. And then in some cases, they're the ones sending out the offer letter to them as well. We do not do that at all.
Glad you said that. And like, it makes a lot of sense now because since I changed my title a couple of months ago, when I tell you like every other day, no, I think I got like two messages today about some type of incident response role. And though they are tempting, it's like, I just got here and I'm trying to finish this project I'm working on. Even though I'm tempted to, you know, every time they hit me, I'm like, dang, can I do the two job thing again? But I think I would just spread myself too thin. I did it a little while last year. And, you know, just for, I mean, it's fun. I think at that time I was not as busy as I am now. So I was like, I don't know how ideal that would be for me, but it definitely makes sense because that's and that's going to go into what we were talking about earlier about how I say, you know, the jobs will find you if you got the skills. So I like the job I'm working now, I didn't apply to, they found me. So, you know, that's right. That's why those who know, we just, you know, stand on our ten and behind what we say. But I'm glad you said that. Pretty much you broke that down, because I had always wondered, you know, what was the difference? Because, you know, I always assumed that recruiters, talent acquisition, I knew it's different departments of HR, but, you know, sometimes you see those people be lumped up with HR and all those. I used to think that they were, you know, I guess you could say somewhat some type of overlap, but they're not the same. So I'm glad you were able to.
Yeah, like, I don't mean to cut you off, but there's a saying that every good sourcer is a good recruiter, but every good recruiter is not a good sourcer.
I can believe that, because I do know for a fact, like, I don't know. I do. Now that I know, like, how what you explained, like, how sometimes they get your skills, I don't even think sometimes some people look at the messages they send people on LinkedIn or like the skills that they saw versus what's really there. Because it's like, this don't match. it's been a couple that's been dead on with like everything I've did before. And I was like, man, and they are.
But it depends on what you have on your
profile. Oh, yeah, no, definitely. And like, that's why I'm big on that. Like, that's why I started doing a service, because people saying they want, you know, all these different things. But I was like, well, your stuff isn't optimized. And after I tell them what to put on there to optimize it, you know, they make a status on LinkedIn. Like, it's like, hey, I got like some interviews. People been reaching out to me. I know, because they can find you now. Can find you at first. But so 2020. So pretty much you've been doing sourcing for the last 2 years. So
yeah,
let's talk about what you've learned, or I don't want to say learned. What have you experienced in these last 2 years of sourcing? Let's go right there.
So I just want to make sure that you know that I've been sourcing since 2018, because I work for a startup, but I've officially had the
title. Yeah. I meant like your title and kind of how you prefaced it. Like, you know, I kind of, you know, sourcing since like 2020. So
Yeah. What's been my experience? Okay. As far as what? Candidates,
I mean,
or
anything like so this will be your time to get your stuff out, as far as what you get tired of. I see some of your tweets and they be spicy. So I'm like, if you want to be spicy, you can get that off. What they say to get on your nerves. Like, how is it? Like, the misconception as far as what y'all do and vice versa. Like, all the miscommunication that you have between clients and them being unprofessional and all that. Look, I'm going to let you rock. I'm going to be on mute.
Okay. I didn't know I could be that raw.
Hey, listen, this podcast is made for that. It ain't nothing like this on the other guys that's trying to be like me. This is what this for.
Okay. I had to make sure. Okay. So, I will say in my experience in general, sometimes working with recruiters who have never been sourcers or don't understand what sourcing is, or don't understand that a sourcer is not junior to a recruiter. We are equals. We just have two different functions within the process. So there has been times that I've had to spend educating them and explaining to them what sourcing is and how I am there to be their partner and support in that way. But I'm not junior to them because I have just as much experience, if not more experience than them. And I've already been a recruiter. So I've done the full life cycle recruiting. So that has been a pain point that I've had to deal with within my sourcing career. Even as far as working with some hiring managers, I've had to do market intelligence reporting, which means that I'm using a talent neuron and I'm pulling reports, data reports as far as a position, the skills that are needed, years of experience, what diversity looks like, what the supply looks like in the market, what demand looks like, where most companies have openings for the exact same roles that are in our industry, what the average compensation looks like. So I'm creating these presentations for hiring managers. We're going into intake meetings have gone into intake meetings and they're like, okay, well, I want this. And I'm like, all right, well, I'm only pre-qualifying people. So what are what are you flexible on? And what's they have to have? And some of the list of requirements that they're giving me compared to the comp that they were offering, I'm like, this is not on par. What do you want me to find? You want me to find a magical creature, because who's going to take this money? Your ask, you need to take it down a couple of notches for this, what you're trying to pay, especially in this market, especially in the tech market, especially with the competition right now. So that has been a pain point for me previously, not currently, because you know where I work. We don't got an issue paying you. So, but that's been something I've had to deal with and having to kind of break this down to hiring managers, that they've been asking for too much. What they're asking for is basically 70% of what's on the job description. And I'm like, no, that's not how it works. You really only need somebody with 30 to 40%. You could teach them the rest of that. What's the problem? So that's been a pain point for me for sure previously. And then I would say, and of course, working with the recruiters on that too, and having to really fight for my candidates to even get the recruiter to take them to the next part of the phone screening stage. That is extremely frustrating. Moving to the candidates, I have definitely been cussed out. I got cussed out last week in an email, actually. Got told off. I was just like, all right, I'll just put them as do not contact in the system. Not a problem. I have had people reaching out to me, of course, about opportunities, especially if I put, I do some freelance recruiting or freelance sourcing on the side. People will reach out to me about the opportunity. I'll ask them a couple of pre-qual questions and they'll be like, oh, I didn't know I needed to have that experience. And I'll be like, did you not read the tweet? Did you not read the information? I literally put what was required and what was preferred purposely so you could understand, hey, we can go through with this one, but this one is solid. So that I would say is one of my biggest pain points. People that don't read. Sorry, my screen is give me a second.
You're good. We know about people that don't read. That's probably about 97% of Twitter.
Listen, it is extremely frustrating. Or I've had to, in the past, because I worked for a small company, even though I was doing sourcing, because I wasn't closing the candidate out, I still, of course, had a lot of interface with the hiring manager, and I was still having to do a lot of the scheduling of the interviews, which normally as sourcers, you don't necessarily have to do that. I've had to tell a hiring manager that he's biased, and he didn't like it. Yeah, I know he didn't like it because he called my my manager about it, well, the director, and me and her had to have a chat. And he basically told her that I called him racist. And I said, see, no, I didn't say that I called him. I didn't call him racist at all. What I told him was that what he was looking for out of a candidate, what he was like, oh, I like candidates that have this, that, and the third, this experience, because I assume they're going to do this. I said, that's a bias. You are biased. You're telling me that you assume that someone that's a business major is going to have a higher level of proficiency in Excel, or somebody that's a student athlete is going to be better because they can multitask versus somebody that wasn't a student athlete in college. What? And I was like, that's BS. Like, I know for me, I wasn't a student athlete in college and I was very high performing. I did well and I do whatever you give me. And I was definitely great at multitasking. So I'm like, that is a bias right there. And we are overlooking people for an administrative assistant position. Are you serious?
Stop it. Get some help.
So those are definitely some pain points. Even as far as it's really, I would say in the past, the comp, having to fight hiring managers on comp, like they don't have much control on comp because it's really kind of what HRBPs or the comp analysis and, you know, whatever they're doing is really going to be responsible for. But we need to level something out, you know, as far as being competitive in the market, as far as kind of maybe being flexible on some of the skills you want them to already have versus what you're going to teach them. So the biggest thing for me, I'd say, is hiring managers and people who don't read. People don't read.
I felt that side. Yeah, I mean, I see that too with some of my clients when they'll, or somebody hit me up for a consultation and they're asking me about comp or they like not budgeting. I'm like, fam, like some of these companies are getting over. I only tell my clients, I was like, if it's enough to pay your bills, if it's either lateral or a little bit more, and it ain't, even though it ain't, might not be the average, I was like, I tell them most of the time, I say, just take it and get your experience. And another position may come and you could just go to that one. But I'm like, just get your experience. Because I've seen some people turn some stuff down and then it still take them a while. I mean, they try to look for the perfect thing. But when you don't have the experience, you don't have that luxury to turn down a lot of stuff. But even then, I just don't even like companies that don't even like offer like the average market value for something entry level. Like, you know, you'll have companies in California trying to pay like security roles like 60 and 70, which don't make sense. I'm like, right. I was like, it don't make sense. I said, you get paid more than that in Dallas. I'm like, I don't know why they trying to get over. That's why they can't keep nobody. That's why one of the positions I did at that second one, I mean, it was cool. I mean, I was getting paid more than other people, but the people under me, they were getting over on paying them. I said, this is why these people leaving. Y'all ain't offering no bonuses. Y'all ain't being competitive with this. Y'all got these people overworked. Yeah, these people gonna come here for a year and leave like they've been doing. And so,
yeah,
they need some people now. So, I mean, I tell people to go to them, get a year experience and go. But
even need a year.
Well, you don't. You 6 months, but so here's the thing. Sometimes I guess it depends on the person. I know people that are highly skilled that they probably only need 6 months. Some people need the year because they really need to flesh their skills out because they don't have like a lot of them. And I was like, if you look up and get in, you know, just get it. But I've also told people like, I guess it depends on what you want to do early on in your career. Like, I don't tell people not to job hop because that's how you get paid. But I do tell them at a point that it may not benefit them in the long run if that's all they do, because they may not be learning what they need to know to go to the next level. Like, you know, after this role or whatever, I could go be director level just based off of what I've did the last 5 years, because I've did that. I can show you, hey, you know, I'm at a fintech company, and boom, I help, you know, us do an implementation, you know, of this software. I do this, mm-hmm. this, and this. I can show them all that, you know, I know how to do this, I know how to do that. So, but sometimes the people that are hopping around, they just hopping around to the same role. And so I just say it depends on what you want your career trajectory to go. Because I do know people, they don't care about, they don't have some type of career aspirations. I know people like those in their 50s working with me, and they were so lazy. I was like, bruh, this ain't it. I see why ageism exists. Yeah.
A lot of people are complacent.
Right.
That's really what it is. I mean, I can say for me, like, I agree with you. I'm definitely like, I'm all for being job hopping, right? But I'm all for strategic job hopping. Like, I'll say I know a situation where someone hopped from one big tech to another big tech, but it wasn't a big tech. It's like you're taking a step down, right, kind of, if that makes sense. Like, you went from a FANG company to a FANG moolah, and it's like the moolah's added to the end because the other one was not a part of the original FANG. That's not a strategic.
Is the FANG moolah, is that including what, Microsoft and them?
Yeah. So FANG, well, it's MANG, I guess, now, because Facebook is now Meta. But you had Facebook/Meta, Amazon, Apple, Netflix, Google, Microsoft, Uber, Lyft, Airbnb.
Well, I wonder why. And I'm curious of how Microsoft was left out the initial thing. Was it purely based on comp? Because I've heard like a lot of great things about Microsoft's comp.
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know. You probably have to ask the creator of the acronym of FANG. It could be possibly because of the products that Microsoft offers in comparison to the other companies. It could be comp. I will say Microsoft pays, of the FANG companies, Microsoft is not the highest.
Right,
FANG.
Right.
No.
Right, right.
Like, not even.
Yeah, I don't think it was the highest, but I think they had some other, not necessarily comp. Let me retract that. I think it was some other added benefits that they offer employees that I've heard are pretty good. So I think that's what I meant to say. I didn't mean to say just comp. Of course, you know, they're still going to be at least competitive. They don't have to be the most. But, you know,
what I've learned is that Microsoft is a place that if you want to, out of all those companies I've named, if you want to go to a company where you're truly, you can get hired into a role where you don't necessarily have that experience and trained into it, or you come in one role and you want to transition into something completely different from what you've been doing, they will teach you. Like, that is a place to learn. And that is why so many companies poach people from Microsoft, because they have some amazing internal training. Not saying the other companies don't have good training, but a lot of those other companies want you to already have those skills.
Yeah.
Like, you need to bring it. That skill set there, you need to increase the value of the team versus Microsoft. Like, it's not saying that you're not increasing the value of the team, but I feel like they do give people more chances in comparison to others, which is not a bad thing. It's a great thing. That's why so many people poach their employees. And one thing about that company is people who tend to work for Microsoft tend to not leave.
Yeah. And I'm sensing a little bit. Well, I don't know. I can't say that. I think the people are like older. They probably started working at my company now for probably like in their 40s or something like that. But they stay. I mean, you know, the company does decent by you. Well, I say very good by you with your comp, as far as like your bonuses and all the other stuff and decent health care benefits. You know, it's very, I say it's very relaxed. It's actually way more relaxed than I thought it'd be, which I used to be like, what happened?
So is Microsoft.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, no, I don't know. Microsoft can't be this late. I mean, at the point where sometimes I used to ask my manager, I said, hey, you got something I need to do? You know, he was like, yeah, just do it. I was like, bet. I was chilling for like the first couple of weeks. No lie. I mean, but, you know, I was like, hey, I ain't going to complain. I'll take this easy money. But like, you know, one of the good companies they have is like for their paternity leave, you know, man or woman, if you have a child, you get to get up to 5 months off and you don't have to use it all at one time. Okay. So, you know, a lot of people stay just for that. Like,
yeah.
You can, oh, what? I'm finna go on vacation, 2 months off, get your full check. ain't mad at it. Enjoy the whole summer. People probably had kids just to be off. But
don't.
What?
Not people had kids just to be off. I mean,
think about it. Because some packages, they only give you 4 weeks, 6 weeks.
No, listen. The company I work for, I'm still a contractor. And I took a risk because I left a permanent role for a contract to hire role. So now I'm going to have to go through. One thing about us, though, if you come in as a contractor, you still got to go through the loop.
Right.
To become a perm. But I looked into the benefits because I'm like, okay, I've been contacted. Of course, I've been contacted by the other big tech companies. It's normal. Especially because I'm not just like a sourcer, a tech sourcer. I'm a diversity, equity, inclusion tech sourcer. So it's like, oh, you work in diversity? Oh, you got that experience? Let's try to get her. I'm like, no, I'm not leaving. But outside of the fact that I really love my team and I love what I do, I did a deeper dive into the benefits. When you're a perm, maternity leave, you get 20 weeks off. I'm at that age where I know that within the next 5 years, probably gonna have a kid. So those are things that I consider now that, you know, at 25, 26, I'm like, I don't give a fuck about that.
Right. And especially, and you know, I'm gonna keep it real, especially for the women, like men, not so much, but they go, you know, a lot of them sometimes go through a lot during childbirth. So, I mean, that 6 weeks and a lot, they're still dealing with a lot when they come back to work. And I think at least 3 months to 6 months, they should have it all paid without the fear of losing their job because, you know, postpartum is real. And if you've been with your child for like 6 weeks and now all of a sudden you got to go back to work, you got anxiety or who's watching my baby. Like, it's a whole bunch of stuff that I don't think they really talk about, you know, when it comes to women. And that also may be why companies are somewhat sometimes biased about hiring women because of that. They have to worry about that, whereas men aren't the ones carrying the kids. But that could probably be a live stream discussion with different, you know, HR and or whatever professionals, because I think that's pretty interesting. But I want to segue back into two things because I forgot, I never brought it up. Or maybe you said it and I didn't pay attention to it. But for our listeners, what type of roles do you source for?
Oh, so full-time, because you know I always keep a job on the side. Full-time, I source for software engineers, back-end software engineers, any back-end program experience. So like minimum 2 years of experience. If you don't have a degree, like, you know, the experience comparable to not having the degree, because it's not a requirement, contrary to what people believe for this company, having the degree, not a requirement. If you have, you know, if you don't have a degree, like have 4 years of experience plus the two, boom. At least like a year of experience being working on some system design, so any of the architecture work. And that's really the minimum qualifications, you know?
Right.
So back-end software engineers, opportunities in the US, Canada, and Mexico, and 100% virtual remote opportunities as well.
Nice. Yeah, I think shout out to Before the Billions. I think on his stream, he said he might be going through some interview processes with, I think maybe the company that you source for. I can't remember. I got to ask him to clarify that. He's a YouTuber, but we did a podcast episode last Friday. So I was shouting him out. But yeah, Natalie and her turning up. But you kind of answered one of my questions because I was actually about skills, but that was for software engineers. I got two things then we'll do. We'll say what type of skills are needed to be, I guess you say good, but the term good could be relative. Maybe we're going to say adequate sourcer. And then after that, we'll get on some I kind of like to talk about. And it's because it could be a generic question, but we could talk about resumes. Because I've seen you talk about resumes before on Twitter, and then that can lead us into some Twitter talk. So, yeah, I'll leave that with you.
Okay. I'd say a good skill to be a sourcer is the search. If you enjoy looking between the lines, as I mentioned, we use some platforms that are not, that fall, they're very close to searching the dark web, but not. if you enjoy that, if you enjoy the hunt, you know, sourcing is definitely something to look into. You still have to have people skills. You need to be able to build relationships. Relationship building is extremely important in sourcing. Recruitment, it's extremely important as well. But with sourcing, you're reaching out to people that are not necessarily interested in your employer, or maybe are really comfortable in where they're at. And you have to sell them the opportunity. And you have to build that relationship, which sometimes it doesn't work out the first time. They may want to speak to you in a few months. So you need to continually communicate with them in between. Everything else, as far as those other tangible skills, like how to reach out, building a strategy, those things can be taught to you. What it comes down to is wanting to do it. If you, and this is not a place where you say, oh, I like people. No, because if you want to, and that's in HR in general. If you want to go into HR because you love people, you're going to hate them very quickly. Okay, because people are the part of the job that gets on my damn nerves. Okay, I love helping people, but damn, they get on my nerves. I don't like people that much, to be honest with you, but I like helping people. I do like helping people, but really, those are really the skills you need. Like, you just need to be able to build a relationship, and you need to be able to, I'd say, be solid at your admin work, because we have to check our own data, because sometimes the data that's pulled from reports is not accurate, and it just happens. So that's really it. I will say this though, it is harder to get into sourcing than it is to recruit. So if you want to become a sourcer, the easiest, quickest way is usually to get a job as either a coordinator, where they're going to move you into being a sourcer, but that may take longer, or getting a job as a recruiter for like a staffing agency. Because in staffing agencies, you are doing a lot of sourcing as well. And then do that for 6 months to a year, maybe, and then move into another company as a sourcer.
Nice. Yeah, because side note, I've always wanted like low key, like I see the companies so that every reason out for like SOC analysts or whatever. I was like, hire me. I know exactly what to look for. I can do the screening. No offense to the HR person, but I can do it better than them because I know who you should talk to and who you shouldn't waste your time on. And I did that really fast one day. I posted some job that I knew the recruiter for, and I put it on Twitter. So many resumes. And I was like, nope, this ain't it. You ain't got no experience, this and that. And it was only like, I think I pulled like 2 or 3 good candidates out, but that's because I did the job and I know what you need to do. I wonder, do they do that? Like sometimes hire people that's in that particular profession. Like, hey, cause I mean, sometimes they'll reach out and say, oh, we offer, you know, a referral fee, you know, if you know somebody, but yeah. For the most part, cause like I said, I see sometimes when they scrape, it scrapes good. But then I've seen some big misses when they send me some stuff. I was like, that's not even remotely related to what I do.
They do. It's a more likely of a chance for within your current employer. Like I have a teammate who, she used to be an engineer. That's why she's so good at what she does, because she knows, like she can go into more details about APIs and microservices and, you know, and whatnot. Whereas me, listen, a good sourcer, a good recruiter can recruit for anything because we can learn the skills, but we have to do extra work. You know, so it's
hey, but just, that might be a book I need to recommend for people, because a lot of people like come to me like, I ain't got no experience. I don't know nothing about nothing. I'm like, hey, y'all need the book.
There you go, so they can see.
But check.
Sorry about the bites. I have a puppy.
You good. I got bites on stuff too. I got a daughter.
My manager sent this to our entire team. I was like, oh, okay. He's like, make sure y'all know what y'all know. I was like, okay, cool. That's fine with me.
Cool, but now we're talking about some fun stuff, because I've seen you not necessarily go in, but I've seen you tell some people about some resume stuff, and I've had to do it since I've been doing this review stuff. I've been seeing some of the same stuff. Like I've been seeing people with like references, like this don't help. What did somebody have on there one time that I was like, I don't even know why you had that on there. I was like, that
your picture?
It wasn't a picture. It was something. I don't know. I see a whole bunch of stuff that sometimes doesn't make sense, and I was like, I see why. I was like, you know, you ain't got no summary, and now some people don't care about the summary, But I do, because a lot of times y'all trying to get entry level roles and we don't know nothing about you. And you just got some crap on your resume that I don't even know if you know how to do. And then you wonder, oh, ain't nobody calling me. Yeah, because they don't know if you know how to do it. Even if you did have these keywords on here, like, you know, it'd be a mess. Or like, so funny thing. I helped one of my homeboys out. I redid his resume for him. I did him a solid. And I moved his education to the bottom. Now he hits me up days later. Okay. Hey man, why you move my education to the bottom? Man, I always had it at the top. I'm like, listen, just trust me on this. You got 10 plus years of experience. Your education is not that important to be at the top. Just trust me on this. Nah, man, I want to move it to the top. I want to move it to the top. I was like, well, guess what? I'm not moving it to the top. Because the first thing you're going to say when somebody say, oh, who did your resume? Oh, my boy did it. I was like, so no, I'm not doing it. I was like, I'll let you move your own stuff to the top, but I'm not doing it because you ain't finna tell people. I put it up there when I know, is it important? Yeah, to check HR boxes. Do most companies really care about it? Not as much, because they want to know if you can do what they want you to do at the job. And that's what I was trying to tell him. And, you know, I left it at that. I was going to say, I was going to also add in like, hey, look what you do and look what I do in the least amount of time. And I was going to go there, but I didn't have to go that route, because then, you know, they probably got mad. But then he was like, you know what? My boy, right.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't even have clients that ask me that. I was like, how your clients trust you more than people you've known for like 5 years?
So the thing about resumes is every recruiter, HR manager, whomever, has a different preference. You know, I learned that 3 years or less of experience, like professional experience, is one page.
Right.
That's what I've learned. And the education's at the top for that. Once you hit that 3 year mark and pass, move that education to the bottom. And you can have, I know some places are like, somebody I saw a tweet, oh, if you have more than one page, then we're just scrapping you. I was like, well, I don't know what to tell you, because my personal resume is actually 2 pages. I don't keep my resume longer than 2 pages. But if you go for like a government role, like a Fed government role, they want extreme details for every role. So right. You can have resumes that are 7 to 10 pages. In private sector, I'm not reading that.
Okay? Right.
I'm not reading that.
If I'm not mistaken, the stats say y'all got 6 to 7 seconds and then on to the next one. No Jay-Z. Right?
I mean, it's more than 6 to 7 seconds. Like, for real, it's like more like 15, 20, 30 seconds. Me personally, I timed myself and I had to press the button to turn it off. So it probably was less, but it took me 13 seconds.
Yeah. I mean, because a lot of times, and this is, I mean, you could tell me you're a sourcer. And this is just me being a person that reviews and I've interviewed people like this. I don't like a lot of word salad on resumes. I don't like you trying to convince me you're smarter than what you is when the words that they put on there are not saying much. I like good words that's concise, that tell me what you know how to do and all this. I don't care about all that, because a lot of people think that really make them look like they're more attractive. And honestly, sometimes it made me want to test you a little bit more when I'm in an interview with you, because you're trying to come off as like you're super smart. And then when I ask you stuff, it's the latter. Meanwhile, the person who keeping it, you know, to the point and 100, they pretty much dead on with what I asked them. So I hate that. That's a pet peeve of mine. I don't know if you feel the same way.
I don't, because I don't particularly look at the resume as someone trying to measure or show off their intelligence more than, because for me, your ability to do the job has personally, to me, has nothing to do with intellect. It has to do with, same thing with GPAs and grades. It has to do with discipline. It has to do with effort. So, and one thing that I know and I learned is like, even the candidate pool that I work with now, they're software engineers. They're not resume writers. So we are not necessarily going to look for, you have to remove that bias of like, okay, this is not formatted correctly. Like, no, I am looking for the programming languages that you have worked with. I'm looking to see if you've been a part of the design process, you know, whether it's been requirements gathering, whether you've contributed XYZ. I'm looking to see how many years of experience. I don't even care about the companies you worked at, personally. I don't. Those are the things that I'm solidly looking for. If I was recruiting for a different profile, like for argument's sake, I don't think I've ever recruited for, no, I have. Like on the side, I'll do some referrals for recruiting coordinators, recruiters. I can go into more depth about that because I've been one. So I can tell, and what people don't realize, and I'll say this is my biggest pet peeve. When I speak to someone and I'm going through their experience, I'm like, well, you know, it's on my resume or according to my resume. I'm asking you questions, baby, because your whole resume could be a fucking lie. So I'm asking you. So you tell me what you have done in your role and you give me, you quantify your results. What did you do? What impact did you make? Because your resume, like I said, I've been learning that people have lied on resumes. And I just spoke with a friend some weeks ago in a TPS, in the TPS technical phone screen, Canada got checked and called out for lying on their resume. So it's just kind of like, that's my biggest pet peeve. Like, if you are not able to talk about your resume and talk about the work you did, then I don't believe you did that work. Why am I going
to
move forward?
Man, see, look, I might have to, that might have to be what I start the episode off with, because listen, I made a whole video about like, should you lie on your resume? Because a person, I don't even know how they end up getting a free consultation on me one day. Took that their resume, had a whole bunch of stuff they never even used. They didn't even know what it was. And they was talking to me about it. And I had got super pissed off. My bias is when it comes to my industry, when it comes to cybersecurity, my bias is that I tend to judge you a little bit more harshly if you lie, because I know the consequences of you being working with me and not knowing what you're doing and what that could potentially mean for me and everybody on the team. So that's where my bias is when it comes to that. But furthermore, I guess I brought in the thing about the word salad on the resumes, because, you know, back with my manager, said, hey, okay, here goes the guy we talking to now. And so now I actually look at it in depth and I'm just like, okay, fam, this is too much. Just tell me exactly what you did. So when I ask you, you know, in the interview, then the person starts talking. But this particular interview, what we found out is that person had which these two typical people make good, like security analysts and stuff like that. But they had like a psychology background. So he talked a whole bunch without getting to the point fast. That's why his stuff was kind of like that. But overall, he still was a good candidate. I was just like, it wasn't for me. And then there were some people that, you know, they just was trying to be like, I don't know. I can see through all the stuff. Like you said, I can call people out of this line too. Like, when I would see people that did help desk and they just slapped security specialists on it, but it's still like help desk work. Like, I get people a game all the time and I say, now some of y'all help desk people been doing system admin work. If what you've been doing line up with a system administrator, just change the title because it match. That's not far fetched. They only playing you because they don't want to pay you what a system admin get paid. So you can do that. But I don't advocate if the functions don't match up, I want to just tell you to throw a title on there. I see people do that all the time. And I was like, recruiters see through that. You know, the hiring manager going to see through that. Like, I don't even know why you do it. Like, maybe because you think it's going to help them call you back. It ain't.
I tell people, like, there is nothing wrong with, in this industry, dependent, of course, with a little bit of embellishment, right? But when you embellish, you need to be able to back that up. Like, if it comes to, I know I made a tweet probably like some years ago, and it was along the lines of, oh, you have been doing, what did I say? You have reached out to candidates, you've been posting jobs, you've been, you know, doing initial screens, da da da. I was like, oh, that sounds like a recruiting coordinator to me versus someone who may have the title of administrative assistant, because they are doing the functions of a recruiting coordinator, scheduling, da da da. I did the same thing for like a project coordinator / analyst. And people were like, oh my God. I'm like, yeah, you have to look at the scope of work, what you have been doing. And that's where you can finesse or whatever your title. Because the title to me, I mean, personally, I don't care about titles that much, you know? And that's just because I don't care to move up the corporate ladder. I'm living this IC life. Okay. I want to get paid as much as I can as an IC. I do not want to manage people. So it's just knowing how to properly finesse. And a lot of people, unfortunately, just don't.
It don't make no sense. Anyway, before I start singing Bruno Mars on here, the last thing we're going to touch on is what you thought about my tweet. For those of you that's not on Twitter, I had a tweet that went, I guess you can call that viral, like something, because I had people hit me. I was like, dog, you done went viral off that. And I was like, they must don't know you from Shreveport, because people was talking to me stupid in the mentions. That's why I freaking changed it to only people that mm-hmm. follow me can even comment on it.
Respond.
But I said, and quote, people want six-figure tech jobs without the six-figure tech skills. And followed that up with, if you have the skills, the jobs will find you. People went to the first part of the tweet, and I got, you won't believe how many people told me I was gatekeeping, or I'm talking stupid, or why that don't happen for white people, or a whole bunch of stuff. A lot of people that's not even tech. People don't even follow me, not even probably even looking at my bio to see why he would say something like that, to see if he even is should be a person that he should be speaking on that. I had some stupid dude. I was like, you know what? And it's the reason why, because I'm trying to be a brand person. And that's why I need a burner. Because some dude was like, how about I pay you $300 and punch you in the face? Like some, and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to block kid. Because I'm just like, it's not, I was like, first of all, I look stupid if I'm going to go back and forth with somebody on a tweet. Somebody don't even know who I am. I don't even think this dude had a picture. Yeah. So I was like, I'm not worried about you. I had other people. I had, man, I'm finna find a screenshot in my phone because,
wow.
Man, that girl made me so mad. Not mad as in like, oh, I want to fight you or I'm going to cuss you out. But I was like, do y'all not read? Where is that screenshot? Because I put it on my, what's that thing called?
So that's honestly why I kind of have stopped going back and forth with people on Twitter mm-hmm. because while this is not necessarily my brand, and I always try to put out there to anyone that follows me, hey, this is my personal Twitter. So I may say some off the wall shit.
Right.
Okay. You have to understand this is not my, I don't mention my job.
Me either.
I do not mention where I work. At all, because I already know how people will try to call up and get you fired. And if you got me fired, first, you're not going to get me fired. That's first and foremost, because I'm doing my job. Anyway, that's one. Two, I have a professional Twitter. And what happened was I was creating it as a way to really build that following. And when I made that thread of all those certifications, the free ones, my Twitter blew the hell up. I went from like 5,500 followers. I'm now at about 9,100 and it's only been 2 months. And I've a few times had to get off of Twitter and deactivate my account because it's so overwhelming. But I just have to stop responding. Any of the tweets that go viral, I mute them shits because I don't have time for somebody trying to tell me. For one thing, you can't tell me anything about my job if you don't do it. And even if you do it, and you're trying to tell me something about my job, but you have 5 more years of experience and I'm making $30,000 more than you. What advice am I going to take from you?
And y'all say my name, put some respect on it.
Period.
Like.
So it's not worth it. And that's why I stopped responding. And sometimes you just got to mute the tweet and keep going because it's people who don't work in tech, who don't know what the hell they're talking about. And you just let them. Twitter is full of people with a whole bunch of opinions, and opinions are like what assholes. Everybody's Man, got one.
It was like I'm gonna read what that girl said verbatim. Okay. When I said, "Oh no, I forgot I left something out that I said in the tweet." When I said people want six figure tech jobs without the skills for six figure tech jobs, it don't work like that. She says, "Guys, this is bad advice." LOL. Yes, you can hit 100K in tech with any degree if you're willing to adhere to a specific timeline. I'm currently interviewing for 80 to 100K jobs in SaaS sales as a consultant. I thought she meant consultant, closing account executive. I have a BA in integrated marketing communications. And this is why I responded to her when she blocked me. I said, what the fuck are you talking about? And look, you can see right here and I'm blocked.
I mean, it's blurred. Yeah, my thing is like, you just proved his fucking point.
Everybody did.
But that's what I'm saying, bro. People on Twitter, there is very low comprehension. People do not read, okay? And there was a tweet going around like, you can tell who had their test turned down when the teacher came around.
That's
like,
facts.
There's so many people on Twitter. And I hate to say that, but a lot of people on social media, a lot of people in life in general have very low reading comprehension skills. And that's just what it
is. I tweeted, I can tell the U.S. read on a fourth grade level after that tweet, after the responses I got. I was like, you tell people they need the skills to do the job and you're considered gatekeeping. That's like telling if a doctor said, hey, you can't come be a doctor without going to med school. Oh, you gatekeeping for doctors now. Everybody should be able to be a doctor. Fam, you got to put the work in to be a doctor. You want somebody cutting on you that ain't go to med school? Fine. You go to him. You go to that little dude that had the glasses on looking like this. But then, like, I had some, not even profound, but it just made me think about, like, people stupid. Like, when I say tech, I mean technical and non-tech. You had people talking, well, technical ain't the only jobs. I was like, yes, but you still would need skills for the non-tech jobs. I was like, what is y'all talking about? I ain't never differentiate between one or the other. I was like, y'all just stupid. Like, y'all so dumb. Then that ties me into when I called old girl out on the BS talking about she can help people become scrum masters.
Okay. I feel so bad because I retweeted it and then I was like, let me go unretweet this because I'm, you know, anything that's just about people getting resources, I try to put on my timeline. But then I saw a few of y'all going in and I was like, did I retweet this? Shit. Let me unretweet right. Because no, you can't become a scrum master in those 6 months. It takes some time right. To get there.
But- exactly. And I wasn't even like coming at her. I just was asking her to validate what she was saying. I said, hey, you got a website, yeah. You got this and that. And because I'm like, you know, I don't mind. I always, if you come to me for something I can't do, I always say, hey, go holler at so-and-so. I don't do that. That's not my forte. Go to them. But I'm not going to do that if I can't verify what you did. And a person that I knew who's, you know, they've turned into like a which I hate this term on Twitter, tech influencer. I saw that they was cool with this. Well, not cool, but that's father person. So I asked him about him. He said, I talked to him before. I guess they cool. But that person, what I kind of figured out about them was, I think it was one girl that might have helped, and her prices was outrageous. She was, I guess she's doing some type of scrum stuff, and I clicked on her stuff because she was the only person liking the girl stuff that was talking back to me. And I forgot what her stuff was for people to like sign up with her. She had a YouTube. I was like, if you go get scammed by that girl, then you deserve it. You finna pay somebody all that money. I was like, because, you know, people be getting away with high rate robbery when it comes to offering services that, you know, oh, that's what I was going to say. I'm going to say this. They're offering services that they're not necessarily qualified to do. But this is what I was going to say when I thought about Twitter and social media in general. Really, the last 2 years of the pandemic. Everybody don't deserve a platform. Everybody don't deserve a voice. I'm YouTube. I see all these different shows where they got these people doing these live streams talking. A lot of these people are not smart and they regurgitating the dumbest stuff you can ever hear come out of people's mouth. And it's perpetuating nonsense. Similar to what you see on Twitter, but it's worse because people are always on YouTube. And I said that on one of my tweets. I was like, everybody don't need no freaking webcam. They don't need internet. Some of the worst things I ever gave to some of y'all because y'all don't be needing this. Y'all don't stick to stuff that y'all actually do in real life. You done got you some following. You done lied about some stuff online and now you're a guru and you just saying stuff that don't make sense. And then when real people call you out on it, you get mad because you can't back up what you're talking about. Nothing that you say you can substantiate. I was like, that's the BS I don't like. The reason why I pulled off on Twitter because I find myself like, I'm a fireman. You know, you bring the smoke, I'm finna put it out. But like you said, that tweet, I was like, man, ain't no way possible I'm finna go at all these people. I could if I just didn't really have nothing to do, but I stopped getting on it because it prevented me from doing some scrolling on the TL, oh, doing this and that. Like, it made good for some topics sometimes. I made good vlog topics from it, but
yeah.
If I need to, I tweet on it, my Google phone, but then most of the time, everything is coming from Buffer Center or Social Bee. Like the times when if I come on there and DM you, that's because I've went and got on my other phone. That's why I may take a minute for me to respond. It's like, it just, you know, free up. Like IG and them don't work that way yet, but when they do, I probably do the same thing. I don't really scroll on them as much because they change the algorithm, but I'm like, hey, if y'all watching this, The stuff you see on social media are not real. Most people be capping from all these different things. When you got what the men are saying and the women are saying, all of it's cap. Everybody got friends who don't do what they talk about, they tweet they do. So just remember that. Just remember that you know these people in real life and stop falling for what you see on social media. I'm going to leave it at that.
Listen. I had a whole, and I've taken a step back from even really addressing the topic, but I've been seeing a lot of like influencers, right? As it relates to career, as it relates to tech, as it relates to recruitment, right? And that's why I had a back and forth with someone that was copying and following a friend of mine's content. She was literally regurgitating her content. And I called her out and I found her LinkedIn and she's like, well, LinkedIn's not always accurate. I'm like, well, girl, this showing like a 7-year gap between the last time you recruited and when you just started doing it now. So
that's not one of them people, you know, that's a twin, is it?
No. So okay. I know exactly what you're referring to. And she actually... One of the twins, I can say for sure, has actually worked in the field of the industry. That's all I'm going to say. Like, me and her, we used to communicate. We don't communicate. Yeah, so
one of they, somebody, I forget, what's it? Might have been Diarra. Somebody sent me her TikTok one time, and I was like, bro.
I don't have TikTok. And I refuse. I'm sorry. I know TikTok is a great resource. It's a great place to play platform. I've been hearing about people lying about shit on TikTok about how to move up in careers and like what to say to recruiters to lie on the resumes. I'm like, and then y'all going to get disappointed
when they don't work.
When you speak to somebody like, and I disqualify your ass from moving forward. And you've lied to me. So I'm going to remember you've lied. So if I move to another company, I'm going to remember that. Or I'm going to tell all my recruiter friends. Right. And we're going to all know.
Definitely. Yeah, I haven't really got into like doing the stitching and making content for it. I mostly post snippets from my podcast and stuff like that. Like, I doubt I ever just go viral unless like I have like a funny moment on here with somebody who like I got issue with or something. We decide to have a podcast episode. I actually want to do that. I have a person, if they would agree to it, I think it could be very interesting. But okay. Nah, I wouldn't do that.
I'm just not on TikTok.
I would do that.
And I'm going to be honest, I'm never going to get on TikTok. Like, I'll see whatever other people post. And if I have to go and like do a web search, but I'm not going to.
Now, I'm not going to lie. I use it too now because like it be showing me about some spots in the Dallas area to eat at. Like, other than that, but like, you know, I got too many other platforms that, you know, for the most part, YouTube is probably like YouTube. Actually, I transitioned like, I've shifted more focus to LinkedIn and YouTube. And then, of course, my other stuff with the power. I don't know. It's just a whole bunch of crap that I've been learning on the fly for like 2 years that, you know, give me time to be an expert in it. Give me time. But let me hit this for us.
I respect that.
So I'll just come back in. But yeah, this has been very insightful. I know the people learn some stuff about sourcing and in between that and recruitment. And guys, if y'all want her back on here, y'all need to let me know, because this is definitely good. I can always get her back on, or we can set up a live stream where, you know, maybe y'all can ask questions, Q&A. We can set up all that different type of stuff. But if that's what y'all want, you know, y'all need to let me know in the comments or whatever, or send me an email. But this is pretty much the end of the podcast. We're gonna let Janae close it out for us. Like, well, I don't know if she wants y'all to follow her because she said she really don't like y'all. But if y'all do, Janae, if they do want to follow you on Twitter, how can they do that?
If you like, I post a lot of content on Twitter for everybody, by the way. So my Twitter handle is so with 3 O's, sweet kitty with an underscore. My name, because I'm a Zeta, by the way. Okay, that's what the origin of my Twitter name. Same thing on Instagram. If you want to follow me, I don't really post that much career related stuff there. But
yeah, and I'll have that in the description, so you guys gonna follow her. You know what I'm saying? You never know. I'm not even gonna message you because I was messing with you about it before we started. But
no, you might as well say it. Just say it.
I'm just saying, a guy on YouTube, you know, might slide in there from seeing you, but.
If he's not making six figures, then there's no point in talking to me.
Man, hey, look, y'all already know that's another conversation. You know, I'm gonna get in my KS voice. You can't make this up. But I appreciate y'all for rocking with me, man. Y'all helping the platform do big things. You know, like I said, we've been on people head top the whole 2022. And this is what it's gonna do. But hey, let's stay textual. We out.